Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. It is Tuesday, July the 8th, 2003. At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2666. Susie, tell us what we're doing here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have in front of you copies of the engrossed House Bill 2666. The bill provides that persons who are eligible for the selective service system that apply for driver's license or permit or ID card consent to registration with the selective service program. You also have a copy of the fiscal impact and the staff measure summary from the House Committee on Transportation that passed it out of committee and referred it to Ways and Means because it has a section in there to appropriate general fund money. Co-chairs are approving the bill if Section 4 is deleted, and the agency has a proposal for amending the bill that would, as I understand it, put the bill in effect when federal funds become available, which they believe would be within the next year. So that kind of just sets the stage for you, and I do think you have a sense.
Okay, very good.
Any questions?
Okay, we have a quorum present, so we'll go ahead with a quorum as a public hearing on House Bill 2666. Thanks. Gary Lockwood.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman George and all of your committee members. I'm Gary Lockwood. I'm the State Director of Selective Service, and I've been one who has proposed the through Representative Krupp the legislation for 2666. This bill is in two simple words, fairness and equity, and I'll just touch on that briefly and then move to the fiscal side. We have historically approximately 10% of our male population, and I emphasize male because at this time females are not required to register, but about 10% who, for whatever reason, for lack of a better term, fall through the cracks. These are people who are generally do not complete high school, people who are not in the usual systems that go on for higher education where they check the block for financial aid and automatically become registered for selective service. And the result is twofold. One, we have a pool that only has approximately 90% of the eligibles in it if we ever should have a draft, which is unfair to the 90% that's there, should have the other 10% with them. And the fact that we have some substantial losses of benefits to that 10%. And they're the 10% who really have maybe the greatest impact by losing those benefits. Those benefits basically are the loss of the right for any funding for education that has a federal subsidy, employment by the federal government, U.S. Post Office Department, Department of Labor training funds or retraining funds, and one that may be a substantial impact or is a substantial impact in Oregon is the loss of the right to become a citizen if the person is not a citizen. Registration can take place up to through the 25th year. After that, there is no catch-up. It can't be. There is no after-the-fact registration, and we're still receiving a number of calls from people who otherwise are qualified for citizenship, but they have not registered, men have not registered, and then they go through an administrative process. Some are able to show that they didn't know they had the requirement and are allowed to go ahead. Those who do not meet that rather strict burden then are debarred for life from citizenship. That's the fairness and the equity side. To date, and I think each of the packets that I distributed yesterday to your offices have this map. We have to date 32 states and 3 territories that have enacted similar legislation. And throughout in attempting to find fiscal impacts, we have gone out to the various departments of motor vehicles in the states to determine, has there been an adverse impact by the legislation? And to date, we have not found any that had impacts, that the fiscal requirements were for reprogramming that is necessary for the electronic transmission. At this time, Oregon, as well as all of the states and territories, do submit electronic record of all of the submissions for applications for driver's license, renewals, ID cards. So that is an ongoing process, and that's paid on an ongoing basis. So this, what we're talking about here, does not affect the electronic transmission requests in there. The average that the states that have requested reimbursement to date, the average is about $9,700. Again, in the packet, there's a letter from a Mr. Delaney, who is our data center chief, and that's the figure that he has presented as the average. I'm suggesting that we have a allocation that is double that. I know that Kelly has done some work on this and has some different figures, but telling you what our average has been and what we found on a nationwide basis. Now, as that's kind of a quick overview of this, and I know the time is of the essence at this time of year, so I would yield to questions rather than more information from me at this time.
Any questions for
Mr. Chair? I'll start with you, and then I'll ask Kelly when she comes up as well. I'm a little surprised at this route because it seems to me that the vast majority of people who apply for driver's license the first time or for renewal won't meet the criteria that the federal government has established to register. For example, they don't require that I register. You don't have to register until you're 18, but you get a driver's license. You can get a driver's license at 16. They have religious exemptions that would take out a whole group of people. So it seems as though most of the DMV is going to take the time of each person. And we're always fussing about wait times in line. So that's going to add to the wait time. And what you're getting out of it is that literally most people are not in numbers you're looking for, especially when we get into the identification cards. We know that when people, when we don't give them a driver's license, whole lots of them drive anyway, so that's another concern I have.
Okay. The experience that that has been has occurred in the other states has been that there has not been a wait time. That it's a part, it does not require signature, it's a in the form of implied consent, but the fact that we don't register women historically, that would basically take out 50% of the number. The others that come before that group that is historically 10%, we have made a number of efforts to reach them and have been unsuccessful, and that this idea was because the electronic tapes have been obtained anyway, it just seems to be a shortcut to do this. Historically, we have not found that it's been an adverse impact at the time of application. Now, that's from the states that have reported to date. Now,
folks who, for religious reasons, refuse. I mean, I believe in the law there's an exemption for them.
Yes.
But does DMV
There's not an exemption, Senator Deuce. There is a process. If there is a mobilization, then there is a process, and that's where the local boards review this to determine if a person is a conscientious objector for religious, moral, or ethical reasons. But it would be a tremendous expense and one that would be unnecessary because we don't have a time that we anticipate a mobilization. It only occurs if that emergency comes about. And so the process now is not to process and have everybody determined if they're A1 or O1 or whatever it's going to be in their draft status, is to just have the pool at the maximum level, and then it sorts out when called, so that many people, conscientious objectors or people who are would have a need for delays for reporting for agriculture or other reasons, don't have to go through that process until the time is at hand that there is a mobilization. But there is in the system the protection for people who have that religious, moral, or ethical objection to bearing arms or serving in the military, two different categories of conscientious objectors. And that's why we have the local boards. Every county in Oregon is represented on one of our 25 local boards, and then we have an appeals board, again, to hear that. But none of that takes place until there's a mobilization. So the agency meets with the particular churches who have expressed their objections to military service on an annual basis to explain this to them, and that's done at the national level. And again, our experience in those states, some of whom have had this legislation for 4 years, has not been a problem. But that's all I can say. That I understand the concern, and I think it's a valid concern. But our experience has been that it's not been a problem.
Could that be because it's in the fine print and they haven't read it, and they don't realize what they're doing?
I don't know. It's still a federal requirement that they register, and it's severe penalties if they don't register.
Right, but you're going to get people at the age of 16 who are not federally required, and I'm guessing that when they hit 18, you're going to pick them up that way.
In fact, we can do an early registration at age 17, but it's held until age 18, and that has come about so that we can get high school seniors before they leave school to register, but that group historically is not a problem. We get the vast majority of them. It's this other 10%. The high school dropouts and the others who fall through the cracks that pose the problem. And I don't mean in any way to make light of your question, because I think it is a very valid concern. And many states have expressed that they had that same concern prior to enacting the statute, their statutes, and in the implementation, it did not prove to be a problem. And I can only rely on what I've been told by these other motor vehicle departments. On it. I don't have 100% because many of them are still in the implementation stages. But Oklahoma, Colorado, Florida, Rhode Island, which was the first, and South Dakota, these have all indicated they had these concerns of what was going to happen at the registration line. But it didn't materialize.
Periodically, Congress talks about including women in the draft for a variety of reasons. If Congress should decide to change the selected service law and include women, would you go back and pick up? I mean, would all women who held driver's licenses in the state of Oregon automatically be registered for the draft?
No, I think you'd have to start have a phase-in period for that. In fact, if there were a medical or medical care provider's draft, which is the most logical one, that's where the biggest shortage is in emergency, there would have to be some provision for the registration of women, because over half of the care providers are women, medical care providers. I'm just saying that there would have to be a federal action to do that. If there were a change, it would be it would be something over a period of time to bring women into that. I know of nothing at the present time that is indicating that that's going to happen.
But you would be able to use the implied consent form that had been signed to do that.
I'm not sure if the implied consent would work for a change in the law in a future time. Generally, you have to have a base point that you start from, and I think those after that time, if there was federal legislation passed, those making application following the effective date of that federal law, the implied consent would apply. It would be my guess, and I'm not representing the Attorney General on this in any manner, but those that had applied prior to that law, I think would not apply. The same as males who currently have licenses that we would not be able to register them under the implied consent theory prior to the effective date of this legislation.
One more question.
Does this mean that DMV will turn over their records to the Selective Service? So, and I mean, I'm assuming that if it's not going to be a lot more expensive, that DMV isn't going to determine who's eligible and who isn't eligible and who's required and who isn't. So does this mean that they will turn their records over to Selective Service?
They are at this time providing that information. To all states, all territories, there's an organization, I forget the name of it, that is centered that I think the information goes to, and then it comes out from, do you remember, something, there's an acronym for it, I don't recall it. But at this time, Oregon is submitting its license information to the Selective Service. It's used for a check-off, and letters come back to people who have indicated that they've that where it is indicated that by the Selective Service Agency that they do not have not registered for Selective Service. That isn't a change. The only change is the implied consent side of it.
Kelly, you want to respond to Kelly Taylor wrote out?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. We don't turn the records over to them. They are allowed to purchase lists from us asking for certain ranges, you know, a male between these ages, that type of thing, and they can purchase those records from us as other government agencies can purchase records from us. So it isn't we turn them over. They purchase them, and they tell us what they're looking for.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this bill is passed, will there be other registration requirements?
I think as I understand the way that works, the 16-year-old is not registered on this because we do not register 16-year-olds. We do what's called an early submission of registration for 17-year-olds, and that's held in abeyance until the 18th birthday, and then at that time registration takes place. The 16-year-old would technically not be registered. If the 17 and the 18-year-old clearly will be registered, and the process is that we attempt to have the information in the disclosure that the 17-year-old it's an early submission of registration, but that's a change that has taken place recently so that we can get the high school seniors get their registration, but it doesn't become effective till age 18. The same, there'd be no registration per se on anyone until age 18. The 16-year-old would not be registered at the time they submit their application for a driver's license.
Still not clear.
Okay.
The 16-year-old fills out.
It's my understanding that that the 16-year-old would not be consenting to the registration at that time because they're not required. The 17-year-old, it can be an early submission, but there would have to be a document come back to them for registration. Clearly, 18-year-old and above is 18 through 25 would be registered. The 16-year-old would not. This takes place. Again, there's no impact to DMV because they're submitting the information, the same information basically they're submitting now will be submitted, they continue to submit to the agency. The agency does the cross-checking against its registration files, in some instances against other data bank files that are available to determine who is and isn't registered. Selective service. Selective service does this. There's no determination made that so that the 16-year-old is not, it will not be registered it would be at the renewal. If they had not registered by the time they do their renewal, then that they would be, of course, what is it now, an 8-year?
Mm-hmm.
They would be age 24 or 22. Pardon me.
24, 16.
Six, yeah, right. Okay, right. At age 24, then it would be implied consent at that time, but it would not be on the initial round because they would not be, they're not eligible, and you get into the law looks forward, not back, and so you can't go back and pick up those who were not eligible at the time that they submitted their application.
I guess just in terms of the purpose of the law and the facts, definitively it tells me, I know at least all of my friends, when they turned 16, that's when they got their driver's licenses. So you'd have a huge...
It's many, most of those, well, again, the 90%, and we work, whether it's actually 9% or 10% that fall through, there, some of those are the high school dropouts, many of them are the undocumented workers, those who are not citizens but still applying for licenses, and they have everyone, every male who's in residence in the United States between ages 18 and 25 are required to register. And so that makes up, I can't tell you percentages, exact percentages of those, because we can only estimate it, but that's a portion of that 10% that we're attempting to get into the pool. There's a few who, for whatever reason, that do not join. But it's kind of like those who go to college and apply for benefits. I'm told by the counselors and the registrars and all, there's very little discussion about whether they want military to be registered. When they X the block that they're not registered, they automatically are registered because that's part of receiving their financial assistance. I think this is somewhat analogous to that, that the person who wants the license, now the 16-year-old, which is a large number of the males, it will be on the second round that we pick them up. It won't be the first round.
Let me clarify that. There's two things. Number one is that the problem for ODOT would be as simple as the person comes in and says, yes, but I don't want to register because I'm a conscientious objector. They would basically say, you're required to register. That should be a simple transaction, not taking a lot of time with the DMV. The next issue is the data that would be available from the person who registered at 16 going to be valuable to Selective Service from the standpoint of anticipating that we have a certain person who's 16 who 2 years from now will be 18 who, in fact, will be subject to registration?
Yes, and it will continue to be valuable. It is now because it sent a letter is sent after a certain period of time, that the actual registration time is supposed to be 30 days before the 18th birthday, 30 days after. That's the technical registration window, that 60-day period. As of from the standpoint of the agency, registration that takes place prior to the 25th birthday is considered as valid registration. The selective service system is set up for the first group to be called are 20-year-olds. And so that's the pool that we attempt to have as high as possible. They're all the names are in there regardless of the age group, but the 20-year-olds are the first to be called. So it goes 20, 21, 22, up through 25, and then comes back to 20, except in the most dire circumstances, 18, 19-year-olds would not be called for selective service. So that's the numbers that we work against, and so we're concerned. We like to get people registered as many as possible on that 18th birthday time, but we recognize that there's still time to get them, to get the 20-year-old pool there, and in fact to get it up to the age 25 is still compliance. And the agency has, except for two or three cases way back in the early 80s, there have been no prosecutions. We attempt to get participation rather than doing the prosecutions.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George.
Representative Krieger offered me a very valid point, which I want to share with you and then lead into a comment. Perhaps a better solution is just to require a re-registration at 18 at the DMV for your license. Because when you go back through and you start thinking about that failure to register is punishable by a maximum fine of $250,000 and 5 years in prison, if a person acquires their license at 16, doesn't have to come renew till they're 24, when they show up to renew, they're already breaking the law. Really, what we have is a toothless tiger. If we're saying come in at 24, and we'll forget the fact that you haven't registered for 6 years.
That's true. And there are other. I'm told that many law enforcement agencies, any position that requires a security clearance, that the failing to register makes that person ineligible for the clearance, ineligible for the position. So there's a lot of problems that they face. Our position isn't to try and revamp the motor vehicle system on this, but the closer we get to complete participation, the fairer it is and the better it is. This is intended to be a minimal cost. You can't say a no cost, but a minimal cost in trying to do a kind of a win-win situation. And through the experience of the states that have enacted it and the fact that we now have a 35 of our 54 jurisdictions with it, it appears to be working out. And I have to say, at the outset, I had some real doubts about this. I didn't think, but I have become a believer in it when I've seen the registration in states that have reached 99% and have, I'm assuming, similar motor vehicle laws. Most states, I think, have a 16, age 16, some form of a license at that age. And some of those states are now have gone from either high 80s or low 90s in registration up and are at 99%.
I'm prepared to support you in this, but it concerns me that you know a young man could not be registered until he's 24. I can assure you there's not a 17-and-a-half-year-old young man who doesn't know that in 6 months he has to register. Whether they talk about it in the locker room or in the halls at school, they know that when they hit 18, they have to register. And it's not so long ago, I guess 15 years ago, that I was at that age. And they know they have to register. The folks who aren't doing it are choosing not to register. And that concerns me.
And I think I very much agree with you. And I think there is a group, and you know, that's aren't in the high school, aren't in the areas, who are not English speakers, that really don't know about it, and that's another issue. But they're still required by law to register, and that is a group that that historically in our experience we do pick up through this system.
Representative Vance?
I think my question was answered.
Let's go back to the hypothetical question that Representative Smith asked, and that is the person that comes in at 16 cannot give consent to be registered at that point, but you have the database. Would you not notify them if you didn't hear anything from them prior to the time they reached the 24?
Yes, we do.
So that information source would be valuable to make sure that you had the pool that you could notify that you failed to register, because we know how old you are now. You're now 18. You were 16 when you got a driver's license. You're now 18. You should register. That pool would provide the mechanism for notification.
And that is done now, and there's a three-letter process that goes out and all. Unfortunately, there's a fairly high number of those letters that are returned because the address is not appropriate between that 16 and 18th year. But there's still, the agency still does process and still does get some registration of that group. But with all the efforts through the schools and various organizations and other places, we've moved up. We've moved up 3 or 4 points overall, but we're still in that very low 90, and historically about the 90-91% with everything that's done.
If we're talking about registering of this 9% of the eligible male population, but yet you can't reach them because they've got bad addresses, whatever, how's this really going to help you in case we ever had to mobilize? I mean, if you can't find them to give a notice that they need to register, how are you going to find them to call them in for selective service interview? Or
well, in mobilization, there are more funds and more resources provided to take care of that problem, and prosecutions would be undertaken at that time for the failure. The agency elected with I think congressional approval not to take the strong position of prosecuting the non-offenders at this time, because there's a likelihood that they would not be called to military service anyway within their exposure period, and that's up to age 25 under the present system. And so we're trying to do what is maybe most acceptable to the general population, most cost effective, and that's really the place where from here is that this is proving to be a cost effective means of reaching the most people and getting the highest percentage of participation. It'll never be 100%, it'll never be perfect, but it seems that we're working towards a substantial improvement on the system.
Okay. Thank you two very, very much. If you would stand by just in case there's any further questions, Andrea Mayer and John Christensen. John, you want to come on up too?
Good morning. morning.
Good morning, Chair George, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU. I actually haven't met all of you this session, or I haven't seen some of you this session, but the ACLU of Oregon opposes House Bill 2666. What you're doing is you're making it a condition for a license for a very select population, and it's not the business of the state to enforce federal laws. If the feds want to buy the DMV records and track down the people, they can do that. But the problem is it's tying it into the requirement that they register. And we oppose the current registration process because there is no mechanism for someone who is a conscientious objector. I think the previous witness testified that at the time of mobilization, that's an opportunity for someone at that point to register that they are a conscientious objector. But the problem is, for many who are, it is very important and it is primary that even at the time that they register, that they indicate that. But that is very much part of and required by them to comply with their attendance to of religious or conscientious objection. Now, and so they can't comply with their conscientious objector status and then also register. It doesn't go hand in hand. Now, we are concerned that with the state action here of requiring someone to this implied consent to get a license, that you start implicating the Oregon Constitution, and specifically Article 1, Section 3. Now, I'm sure all of you are familiar that actually the Oregon religious provisions of the Constitution are far more expansive and numerous than the federal First Amendment. There, in fact, are six sections, and I will cite only one, Section 3, Freedom of Religious Opinion. In Oregon, no law shall in any case whatever control the free exercise and enjoyment of religious opinions or interfere with the rights of its conscience. So once the state becomes an actor in this, we're concerned that that's implicated, as well as potentially Article 1, Section 20. That is our equivalent in our equal privileges and immunities. And Representative Smith, you mentioned the issue of potentially, I think, re-registering at the age of 18 for men who are required to register for selective services. And I think it even strongly implicates that there's a financial implication to anyone who has to re-register their driver's license. And we think that the equalities and privileges and immunities of citizens treating one class differently than another would certainly be implicated in that situation. So the purpose of a driver's license is to test and determine whether someone is eligible to drive in the state of Oregon. It's not whether someone's applying to complying with all the federal laws that we have, be it the tax laws or anything else that the federal government is responsible, not the state, for enforcing. And the problem is that those who object to registering, and I'm sure a good portion of that 10% of those who are not registering, because again, if you're a conscientious objector and you're complying in a religious sense, you can't even register and note that you're a conscientious objector. So you're really prohibited on the front end from complying with your religious tenets. So those who don't, that 10%, are likely those who are trying to exercise their religious freedom. What the result is, they simply will not obtain their driver's license. And as Senator Dukes pointed out earlier, that means that you have people driving who aren't licensed, who aren't insured. And that's about the last thing we want to continue setting up in Oregon. Let the federal government do its job. Let them purchase the list. Let them enforce the selective service. That's their job. That's their duty. They have the funding for that. But don't bring the state into this. They shouldn't volunteer. We should not be volunteering state government documents and turning them over to the federal government. And the ACLU urges you not to further move House Bill 2666. Happy to answer any questions.
Senator Morris? Excuse me. I stepped out. Your affiliation?
Senator Morris, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator George, just a comment. I'm a little rusty in testifying. I haven't done it much this session. So,
well, you give me your name right now.
Okay. For the record. Thank you.
That's right.
For the record, my name is John Christensen, and I serve as a staff person to State Senator Margaret Carter. And Senator Carter asked me for your patience this morning. She has, I don't know if that's a precise word, but she has another obligation dealing with health issues, and otherwise she would be here. I have a handwritten statement from her on House Bill 2666 that she asked me to read, and I would like to do so if I can. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my brothers, all three, served in this nation. One brother was killed in a night flight during the Korean conflict. I have a daughter in the military serving as a sergeant in charge of supplies, and a grandson who is presently serving on the North Korean border as we speak, as well as a daughter, another daughter and son, as well as my husband. We are a nation that respects matters of conscience. The Oregon Constitution, specifically Article 1, Section 3 in our Bill of Rights, State Bill of Rights, protects from interference in matters of conscience. I am concerned for the young person raised in a faith of nonviolence, a Quaker, a Mennonite, a Jehovah Witness, a young man in turmoil or still rising in his moral understanding or foundation of his faith, not be confronted at such an early age of 16, 17, or even 18 in pursuit of a state driver's license or renewal, face this as a presentation from the state. For a young person, a driver's license is a significant moment in his or her life, and I would prefer we not mix these two. For some young people raised in a faith, such as a member of the Society of Friends, which I presume all of you know is another word for Quakers, this can be a troubling, confronting, true upheaval in his faith from a community of faith. So I ask or suggest that these two should not be united as a matter, not as a matter of country, but as a matter of respecting conscience in the two systems of state and federal government. I strongly believe, as you can see, in my immediate family, as well as my siblings in service to my country, we are a military family. Thank you very much. And I, of course, I'm open to questions. I know that some of you know we do have Society of Friends, Quakers, in our population. I know that there are significant Mennonite populations and communities, and I'm sure many of us have been visited or have had some interface with the Jehovah Witnesses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, you too. Harry, if I could get you to come back up, probably a couple of things need to be clarified for us. Number one, a young person who's a Quaker is required to register. Is that correct? And then
the federal law is that all males between the ages of 18 and 25, pardon me, the law is that all males at age 17 and 11 months through 18 and 1 month are required to register with Selective Service. There is a very clear provisions, and the conscientious objectors are not only for religious reasons, they're for ethical and moral reasons as well. And so a person, there are probably as many in the ethical and moral area as there are in religious. It might be noted that our sponsor of the bill, Representative Krupp, is of a religious faith that is nonviolent. His father was a conscientious objector during the Korean War period, but he still believes very much in the registration and recognizes, I think, that there is the mechanism. We have members of the Mennonite Church who serve as our local board members, and that's what the local board members do, is they hear the requests, the applications of people, whether they, of these young men, whether they are for religious, moral, or ethical reasons, why they do not want to either bear arms or to serve in the military. Mm-hmm. And there's religious groups who do not want to bear arms but are willing to serve as medics or yes. chaplain's assistants or in non-combat roles. But to try and determine those at the outset, would be a tremendous expense and would put a number of people through a lot of unnecessary administrative processes and expenses. And there may be changes between ages 18 and at a time when there might be a call-up. Mm-hmm. So to try and determine it at one point and that is a constant, these are very changing things. College experience often changes a person's moral, ethical, and religious beliefs. And they're recognized and they're protected. But the determination for those are if there is a call-up. It is not part of the registration process, and to attempt to confuse those two is not a, I think, a proper thing to do. And again, I would urge that we favorably consider this legislation and try and answer any other questions, although maybe have kind of beat it to death at this point.
I just want to get back right on the record again that everyone is required.
Everyone is required.
Is required under federal law shall do that. And then you can express your concern later. I can remember, I know my own personal concern about the conduct of the Vietnam War and a question that I asked. And it was made clear to me that there were options out there, things you could do if you decided that you wanted to pursue that. But we understood that we were, in fact, to get down there and get registered.
There's the alternative service program, and our last full-time selective service director told me that he spent about 75% of his time working in the alternative service area. I'm sure that's a fair amount of time that was spent because of the necessity for that being fair both to the person who has that religious, moral, or ethical belief and to the other people who are serving. So it's a very difficult balancing act, but it's one that was, I think, very adequately approached.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, at this time, we're waiting for some amendments to be drafted to clarify the bill. So at this time, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2666, and with the tap of the gavel, we'll also be adjourned. Is there anything further before I do that? Should come before the committee? Senator Morris. We have a clarification amendment and some other amendments were suggested yesterday.
The one amendment that's been approved by the co-chairs is to remove Section 4. The department has an amendment that would allow them to implement this when federal funds become available, which they think would be in about a year. That part of it hasn't yet been approved by the co-chairs, so we need to run that through them.
Anything more?
I'm sorry?
Is there anything more?
There was a suggestion that there may be some another bill that they might want to be rolled into this one. Federal law doesn't require it, Senator, and we don't know what's in the mind of our federal lawmakers.
Well, they're not registered until they reach
they don't imply consent when they are 16. There's no implied consent, and it doesn't carry over when they turn 18. They have to seek that. I mean, the Selective Service would have to seek explicit at that point. as I understand, I they can't imply consent when it's not required.
Well, let me.
The ones they're after here are the ones who are between 24.
Gary Kelly, do you have an answer to that?
Why
is a 16-year-old trying to get an answer? Do you have a reason why the 16-year-old couldn't, in fact, is it because of the age issue, could not be considered to be granting authority for registration at 18? That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation. I think it's what Mr. Lockwood has said. They're not required to be registered at 16. Therefore, I don't think you. He says there's a pre-registration at 17, but not at 16. So I'm not sure that, you know, it'll say, you know, I, you know, the statement would be on the application would say something to the effect of, I understand that by, you know, getting this license or permit or ID card that I'm deeming consent to register when if required. It doesn't say when required, it says if required. And so, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I don't think that 16-year-old, I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I don't think they can. I think what Susie has said and what Mr. Lockwood has said is they can't be given consent.
That's what the statute says, with the selective service, if the person is required by federal law to register.
Now, what I don't know is, you know, what if you're of that age and you're female and they change the law and now you're required? I don't know if that backs up. I mean, I really don't know. That's something for the legal minds to look at. So.
When we bring this back, if we have further questions, we'll see what gets clarity in advance. Representative Hansen.
Well, just a comment. If we're talking about this is because there's not prosecution, there's not a mobilization at this point. We're talking about fulfilling a real technical requirement. At that point, if we're going to do implied consent into the future, why couldn't the federal government do the same thing with Social Security numbers? When you get a Social Security number, that it's implied consent that you're, if you're ever eligible for registration, you'd be automatically registered.
Right.
Well,
I think you're right. That
you have to have it for income tax purposes, so you do it.
You have to have the driver's license for a whole lot of purposes. But anyway, I guess I'm.
Okay. It seems like we have questions about this bill. If we any things that might come to mind, let's see if we can get back. Let Susie know. She can contact appropriate people for an answer. And I'll go ahead with what I was stating was that we would close the public hearing on House Bill 2666, and with a tap of the gavel, we'll be adjourned.
Thanks.